Caller number 10 at 800-636-1067. You'll have won a pair of tickets to the Freedom 250 Grand Prix. IndyCar zooms into history with the first ever race around the National Mall, August 22nd and 23rd. Get race ready with all the information you need to know at freedom250gp.com. I say good luck to you. Caller 10-800-636-1067. We do a little thing every afternoon at 4 p.m. It's called the Beltway Blitz. It's kind of a Cliff Notes, to be honest with you. Now, Cliff Notes, I know, Cliff Notes is outdated. You guys had Spark Notes and a bunch of other stuff. Now you got ChatGPT. It's like, summarize the Odyssey for me. And it's like, Christopher Nolan did it in 3 hours, bro. It's about Matt Damon.
Yeah, watch the movie.
But we had things called Cliff Notes. It's a Cliff Notes version of what's going on in the world of DC sports. And we're going to start it on the diamond, please. Bobby Blanco of the Bronx covers the Washington Nationals, Mass and Sports. Bobby, before we get to Jacob DeGrom casually setting a nice little milestone of 2,000 strikeouts against the Nationals. It feels like all 2,000 were against the Nats, by the way. Andrew Alvarez threw well again. And at a certain point, like, the more you do something, the more it is what you do. He's going to be a two-war pitcher for this team. That's the pace he's on to finish off kind of strong. I know it shouldn't be all that special and all that good, but he is kind of making a case to be part of something here going forward. Give me your Andrew Alvarez view.
Yeah, I think, you know, for people who haven't been following, you know, this farm system for the past couple of years, I know maybe you may be more interested right now because the new front office has taken this and revamped it and made everyone a little bit better, elevated everyone's floor. But Andrew Alvarez is one of the, you know, longtime top prospects in the system. At once, I believe he was the top pitching prospect for the Nats. And we're kind of seeing his floor be elevated, right, to like what he, his whole potential. And I give the Nats front office and coaching staff credit for giving him an opportunity earlier this year to pitch extensively in the major leagues. I believe he was the first call when Jake Irvin went down on the IL. And then when Jake came back off the IL, they stuck with him. And they did the hard thing that I don't know if the previous regime would have done, which is cut ties with Miles Michaelis and Zach Fidel. And, but you know, like the veteran guys that they brought in on one-year deals and spared their young guys. This whole rotation is now full of young guys. And Andrew Alvarez obviously being one of them, like you mentioned. And I think he's getting his fair shot. And, you know, crafty lefty, he's not going to blow you away with any incredible stuff. But he's always had this, like, kind of very nice honed-in craft that, like, I think that was very – and analyzing for the Nationals. So yeah, he's getting his full shot finally, getting a lot of major league innings under his belt and can prove that he's getting outs consistently. I think, you know, you're going to look at him, if he finishes the season strong, you're going to look at him coming into next year as a guy that's competing for a rotation spot in spring training.
From a one crafty lefty to a power thrower and righty, how about Cade Cavalli? I mean, we've been waiting for him to be this. I think the Nationals expected him to be this for years, but he's dealt with the injuries and various reasons not being able to get back. Now that he's back and established himself, he's started as many games as anybody in Major League Baseball this year, and over the last month and a half been absolutely incredible. What have you seen from him?
I think you hit the nail on the head right there, Toby. It's we've been waiting for this, right? Like the poor guy going through all the injuries that he did, you know, former first round pick, top prospect himself, you know, was the number one prospect in the system for a long time. And then, you know, that spring training where it looked like he was going to make the team and then have to have that Tommy John injury that set him back basically two seasons was brutal. But yeah, we're finally seeing it. And I think that Cade Cavalli is finally comfortable, confident in the major leagues. He doesn't have to worry about, oh, I'm ramping back up, I'm building up, or I need to protect my arm. He is just out there and he's just pitching, and he's pitching with the stuff that we knew that he had since he was coming out of Oklahoma, being one of the top pitching prospects out of that draft class, and then of course in all of the minor leagues. You know, people forget that he went from basically high A to triple A in one season in the minor league. So he's got the stuff. And, you know, the handful of starts last year, at the end of last year, everyone was saying, like, while Mackenzie Gore, you know, was the crowned ace of the staff, you know, Cade Cavalli's stuff was better. And I think we're seeing it right now that he is just going to become a ace-like type pitcher. Maybe not number one, but definitely a number two, no lower than that. And someone who can, like, go out and take control of this rotation. And every time he takes the mound is must-see TV for Nats fans because he's pitching, like, a true ace right now, a guy that you, and any given night can give you something that you saw for Max Scherzer or Steven Strasburg for all those years. That's the kind of pitcher he is right now. It's been a lot of fun to watch. I'm really happy for him, too.
Bobby, let's say 106.7 The Fan made an announcement that I was going to change time slots. And then I didn't change time slots for like a day, 2 days, 3 days, a week, a weekend. Then like I got laryngitis or something like that. When is CJ Abrams playing second? What's going on there?
Well, I hope that never happens. I love listening to you guys.
Oh, you're a sweetheart, Robert.
But yeah, I think, you know, it has been kind of a crazy, weird week, right? I mean, it was a week ago today that Blake Butera announced that they're going to move CJ to second base. And keep in mind, it was an announcement. It wasn't like a Nats reporter was going in there asking, hey, have you guys thought about this?
Great point, Bobby.
You know, or someone, or, you know, picked it up from like, the agent or something. Hey, they're thinking about it. The Nats announced this themselves when they didn't really have to. And I think it's unusual that they did that and then, one, wait a week to fully do it. I mean, why announce that if he wasn't ready to take second base that night, you know? So, like, maybe keep working at it. And then once he's ready, hey, we're thinking about doing this. We're going to give CJ a shot at second right now, yada, yada, yada. But now CJ's dealing with an injury. And luckily, it doesn't seem like a very serious ankle injury. All images reportedly came back fine. He's not going to play tonight, doesn't sound like. Hopefully, he can play tomorrow in Miami because he couldn't do baseball activity yesterday. So I don't know how serious this ankle injury is. Reports that the imaging came back fine, but it all kind of just adds to this weird, I feel like, unnecessarily forced drama from the Nats, one, announcing that he's going to make this move, and then now he didn't play him for a week, and then now he's injured, so it's going to be pushed back even further. I believe it's his right ankle, too, and, you know, for a second baseman, you're using that ankle a lot to turn towards first base. How comfortable are you going to be having him change position when he's dealing with a nagging injury like that? It's going to be kind of interesting to watch, and again, it feels like an unforced error on the Nationals' part.
Bobby, team 7 games under 500, playoff hopes are pretty much gone. But what are you watching last month and a half of the season?
I think as we get closer to September, I'm going to be really curious to see who they call up and as the rosters expand. You know, we just talked about the CJ Abrams move to second, and I think that goes into the conversation of, well, look who they have in the minor league system that can play short. And I think for the first time, you know, CJ had to look over his shoulder a little bit, because if you look at the Nationals' top prospects according to MLB Pipeline, 4 of the top 7 are guys that can play shortstop at a high level. So for the first time ever, he's really had to look over his shoulder and be like, oh, there's guys coming for my job. I really need to play shortstop very well. And he hasn't. So I think of guys like, Seaver King, the first first round pick from a couple of years ago, who's having an outstanding season this year. Will he get a shot at the major leagues? I saw Grant tweeting about Trey Lipsticum. People might forget about him. He's having a career year.
26 bombs. 26 bombs.
He's leading the whole minor league system for the Nationals in home runs. That's ridiculous. So yeah. Good for Trey. I would love to see him get another shot at the major leagues after the seasons he had. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing, you know, obviously the playoff kind of run is might be a little bit over with. But who are they going to bring up from the farm system, give a crack at the major leagues, and kind of set up, you know, the offseason talk of, all right, where do we need to address the roster in the offseason and get prepared for hopefully a contending team in 2027?
Bobby, thank you as always, bro. Have a great weekend.
All right, have a great weekend, boys. Thanks for having me.
See you, my friend. There he goes. Local 53 Sounder, please. By God, that's Johnny Cakes, all those music sports junkies and commissioner of the Homies League. Cakesy, when is the draft?
The draft, hold on. I believe it's either September 3rd or 4th. Don't quote me on that.
But it is set.
I think it's at 7. It's set. Go check your Yahoo. We're still dinosaurs that play fantasy football on Yahoo. I know that we're a dying breed, but still there.
That's a dialed-in commissioner. He's like, I think the draft is sometime.
Well, it's the 3rd or the 4th. It's one of those two nights, but I know the time. It's 7:45 p.m. Eastern time.
I love much. Cakes is an excellent commissioner. He deals with the slings and arrows that inevitably come with being a commissioner.
Yes.
Despite being a very nice man, he rules with an iron fist. Eccentric league settings, and this is how we do it, period. No complaints.
Love it.
Well, I mean, I don't know if Tobe there knows that it's basically we're playing, it's like Gladiator, it's like 300. There are no waivers. It's first come, first serve, first made of the waiver wire. So I know that threw Danny for a loop the first few years, but he's adjusted now.
I have adjusted.
I love it.
Yeah, there's no waivers. It's two quarterbacks, 6-point passing touchdowns. It's borderline anarchy, but I would never miss it. I love
it. There's a lot happening. There's a lot of plate spinning going on there.
That's how it goes, Cakes. I love that. So you were out at training camp the other day. What'd you make of what you saw, some of the conversations you had out there?
You know what? All the guys that came through our tent were awesome. I mean, we got to sit down with Chig and Revo. They sat down with us together, and they were great. I'm predicting wildly outlandish numbers for Chig and Conquo in this offense. I need to be talked off the ledge on that. I'm kind of like Danny, who cannot properly diagnose. Is it tall wide receivers,
yes.
Danny? Is
big
that your
wide
thing?
Receivers.
Like,
I love
you. Just smitten by them. Any guy that looks like Herman Moore or Megatron or, you know, anybody, Randy Moss. I mean, those are some studs that I threw in there, by the way. But yeah, any big wide receiver, Danny's going to improperly put numbers on. But Chig and Revo were great. Terry McLaurin, of course, you know, always an amazing class act, and I'm missing the fourth. Oh, we had Nick Cross as well, so another new addition to the defense. They were great, and I didn't see that much of practice because we were broadcasting during a lot of it, and I was getting my neck burned by the big, giant, glowing orb known as the sun for about an hour and a half of it. I think I'm still lucky to be here, but camp looked good from what I saw. We also had Dan Quinn sit in with us before practice for the day started, so always a good time to get out of camp and see and that it's being professionally run, unlike it was during Dan Snyder reign of terror.
So I want you to imagine, Cake, so you have a Mike McDermott type bad beat to start the movie. Okay. This is your movie, okay. Poker style, right? Your last 30K in, you get a terrible beat. Yeah. After you've already sat down with Johnny Chan, you're overconfident. You lose the Teddy KGB. Yeah. You're down and you're felt. Okay. You have your last $100 and you have to bet on the 7.5 over under win total for your local Washington 53. Ooh. Where do you place that hundy?
Ooh, so I'm down to my last 100. I'm either basically going to the homeless shelter or I'm doubling up and I'm making something of my life.
Yeah, Worm is no help. You're driving Kanish's route, right? I mean, you're doing the deliveries. Yeah. You're going to law school at night.
Doing the odd jobs. I'm hiding my bankroll from my girlfriend.
Thank you.
The whole nine.
Played by Gretchen Mol. Toby sleeps on this entire reference.
Gretchen Mol, it's a good pull. Like, that was her only real bit she ever did in Hollywood that I know of, but since you know her name, you may not know more about it than I do. Danny, I'm going to bet the over. I'm going to stick to my guns because, of course, I bet the over when we did our wackadoo schedule, pick the games before the real schedule even comes out. I'm going to stick with the over and just hope that we're going to see the Jaden Daniels and level of offense that we saw back in 2024. Pair that with hopefully, I'm not going to say a vastly improved defense, but it should be a much improved defense from what the abomination that we all had to watch last season. So if I'm down to my last $100 bill, it is going to go on the over for your Washington Commanders.
Which of the new coordinators do you trust more going into year one?
It's a great question. I'm going to go slightly with Durante Jones. I just have a feeling he's going to put these new pieces in the right places to succeed. And I feel like he's got some better tools to work with, obviously, than Joe Witt had. It's like 60-40, 55-45, but I'm going to give the slight nod to Durante Jones here over David Blough. It's not to say I hate David Blough. I'm just going to give a slight nod here at this point to Durante Jones.
Let me just finish the tweet. I hate David Blough, Johnny Cakes, all of them. Cakesy, why do you think they didn't want Deebo Samuel back at all? You see that little story where he was talking about how he thought everything was cool and they never called him or whatever that was? He ended up going back to San Fran. But why do you think they weren't interested at all at not that expensive a price?
I mean, I would say they wanted to get younger, but they actually got an older guy in Diggs than Deebo. So it couldn't have been that. I guess he must just not been a fit for what Blough wants to do on the offensive side. That's the only thing that I can think of. Maybe they just felt like Diggs is a better fit. They saw what Diggs did last year on limited snaps with the Patriots. And for some reason, his market wasn't bigger and it was a perfect fit. So they rolled the dice that there wouldn't be a big market for Deebo. They clearly didn't want Deebo here. So I don't know why he feels so jilted. But look, he lands back in a good spot for him with the Niners with all the injuries they are dealing with over the last few years. So he landed in a good spot, and the Commanders got the guy they wanted to be the number two wide out in Diggs.
You just talked about how high you are on Chig. We talked about this about an hour ago, about some guys that were maybe a little higher on than the general consensus. Is there anybody else on the team that you're feeling a little bit better about than maybe they're being talked about right now?
I mean, I have to feel pretty good about Odafe Owe. I mean, there's a reason that Adam Peters gave him $68 million guaranteed and $100 million to be the pass rusher that they so desperately need to add to this defense. I mean, he has to be a guy that can rack up 12 to 15 sacks. I mean, the Commanders haven't had that guy in quite a long time, and hopefully he's that guy. And obviously they're a little higher on the market than everybody else, than Diggs as well, even though I know that there were some suitors for him late, especially the Chiefs. I know we're mentioned as a team that wanted to bring him on board, but Commanders are high on Owe and on Diggs, and hopefully those guys are both big contributors on each side of the ball that they're on.
Cakesy, thank you as always, my friend. Enjoy the weekend.
Homies League, either September 3rd or 4th. Check the Yahoo site, my friend.
I'll be ready either night just in case. Love you, buddy. There he goes. That is Johnny Cake Sawville, and that is how we Beltway Blitz. So our guy, Tobias Funke, a.k.a. Toby, a.k.a. Toblerone, a.k.a. only during Tech Talk, Toki, has compiled a list of national media, if I can say this, Tobes, correctly,
yep,
not being particularly flattering or kind to your local Washington 53. We wanted to kind of do a forensic examination here and ask you the question, are they right? Do they have a point, or are they missing it, to quote our guy Dan Quinn? I think it's a mixed bag, to be honest with you. I think there's some nuance to it, but I think we could have some fun with this. So either, you know, we can call out a couple things we think are wrong, or say, you know what, they actually are on point with this criticism, etc. National media, not too bullish on our local 53. Do they have a point? That's next.